Restoration to order. This is Monday, December 2nd, and we will open a public hearing on both bills, House Bill 4070 and House Bill 4071. I would call on staff to give a brief summary of the two bills.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 4070 authorizes the state treasurer to issue revenue bonds from cigarette tax revenues. This will be from cigarette tax revenues passed after September 1st of this year, so it would be new cigarette tax revenue. The bill is referred to the electorate for approval at the next general election. If it is approved, the treasurer will be authorized to issue revenue bonds generating net proceeds of $250 million. The bill specifies the distribution of these bond proceeds to various education, public safety, and human service programs that are listed in the bill. The bill sets up three funds to accommodate the net proceeds of the bill and debt service and the administration costs of the bonds. House Bill 4071 is the ballot title to send House Bill 4070 to the electorate.
Thank you, Ken. We have a sign-up sheet. I think there's still some in the back. We'll just go in order with regard to those that have signed up. Please excuse my pronunciation of your name. That's probably a combination of my inability to read the King's English and your inability to write it. The first person on the list is Al Sonifer. Thank you for coming, sir.
Thanks.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes. For the record, my name is Al Seneker. I serve as executive director of two different organizations, one called Coast Rehabilitation Services in Astoria, Oregon, that provides group homes to individuals with developmental disabilities. We're the only provider in Clatsop County. I also serve as executive director of Riverside Training Centers, which provides the majority of both residential and vocational services for individuals with developmental disabilities in Columbia County. And the Coast organization also provides some homes in the Gresham area of Multnomah County. I'm here, obviously, to express extreme concern about one of the provisions that was included in the governor's cut list, which included the proposed closure of 107 group homes for individuals with developmental disabilities around the state. And the fact that the restoration of that cut is not included on this particular list. That's a real concern because I would hope that all of you at one point or another have had an opportunity to visit group homes in your area, and you know the kind of people we're talking about. We're talking about individuals who cannot take their own medication, in many instances cannot feed themselves, cannot safely cross the street and those kind of things. And we're talking about putting 427 of those individuals on the street because there really is no place else for them to go. That concerns me greatly. When we look at our two communities, and Betsy Johnson is our representative up there, I mean, simple statistical averages would be saying we'd be putting 12 to 15 such individuals within that group of counties that I've talked about on the street. We serve no one who would live probably more than 2 weeks if you did that. And I'm not here to champion against education. My God, we all know that our children need to be educated. But if we cut 3 weeks off a school year, kids go home to their parents. You put 427 severely disabled people on the street. People will die. And so I think we need to take a much more serious look at that aspect of this particular program. There are all kinds of other things within the developmental disabilities program that are simply unrestored. I mean, I would almost argue, you know, let's send some prisoners home. We can all get guns and defend ourselves, maybe. But you can't, you simply can't put vulnerable people who can't take care of their basic needs on the streets with no plan. And until that issue is addressed, I have to be strongly opposed to this particular solution to our problem. And with that, I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Al. You mentioned 427 severely disabled individuals. Is that in your region or is that statewide?
That's statewide.
And that was how many homes?
The proposal is 107 homes serving, I believe, 427 individuals. Yeah, the numbers that were included in the cut list that was put forward.
Any questions? Is Sonniker?
Sonniker, yes.
Any questions for Ms. Sonniker? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Al, I know that you have come to bring this important issue to the committee and to the entire legislature's attention, but I also know that you have a great deal of expertise across the services that are offered in human services. One of the difficulties that I have with looking at this particular bill is that it has, as a component, a huge number of other cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Are there other areas where there is no potential restoration for the cuts that you think are important for the committee to be cognizant of?
Well, certainly. I mean, in the senior services area, I know you're addressing a small number of restorations in that particular area. I know that the cuts in the mental health arena, we hear about this all the time, seriously mentally ill people being out on the streets. The care of the mentally ill is a different sort of challenge than the care of developmentally disabled people. Developmentally disabled people, you take one look at them, you see an individual in a wheelchair who can't care for themselves, and you say, this doesn't work. With mentally ill, it's very frequently cloak more. You just have people who cease taking their medications because they're not under supervision. And then the next thing we hear is, you know, somebody got killed and those kind of things. So, I think across the human services spectrum, it is the kind of cuts that are being proposed in this particular grouping are the most serious I've seen in 30 years of experience in three different states. I've never seen these kind of cuts seriously considered.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, sir, for coming such a distance. I will skip over a couple of names in order to get to the individuals that have come from over 100 miles. So the next individual I'd like to call is Commissioner Jane O'Keefe. Am I doing that poor job on the name? She can write well, I just can't read, but I think we've got that one. Okay, not seeing Jane. Next individual would be Christiane Pierce from Marion County.
The pronunciation is Christine.
Well, I was just drinking Perrier, so I'm trying to do the French thing.
Okay, it is a French descent. Representatives, my name is Christine Pierce. I live here in Marion County. I am a consumer for Department of Human Services. I have two sons who have disabilities, one with developmental disabilities, who is 19 and a half years old, waiting to go into the brokerages when he turns 21. Another son who has a variety of other disabilities that does not allow him to be eligible for duty services. However, it does allow him to be eligible for vocational rehabilitation services. I also am a parent of a group of parents throughout the state, Parents in Action. We have a membership of over 200 individuals across the state of Oregon. We are diverse in cultures and disabilities. We have been collecting stories from our families on the services and how they impact our lives. Parents have finally been able to become employed and are able to become taxpayers instead of tax burdens. Cutting the services to these families will have major impact on their life and the quality of their individual children's lives, as well as their care providers. Cutting the services to the group homes and the brokerages and the vocational rehabilitative services, all coming within the Department of Human Services, for the individuals that are being served will send them into crisis and create major physical impact around the state of Oregon. I strongly urge the representatives to look at ways to bring in revenue into the state instead of making tax cuts that will affect the lives and the quality of these individuals who are served. I urge you not to make these cuts to the Department of Human Services and take a look at the physical impact it will have throughout the state on these families. I am also a council member for the local Marion County Integrated Services Network, which is one of the brokerages that serves throughout the state. As a consumer, getting involved with these brokerages is opening the door to assist my son how to become independent and live on his own. This last summer, my son graduated from high school only to go home and sit. There were no services in place for him because he had finished with high school. DD services no longer serve individuals beyond age 18. So he virtually is receiving no services other than special education transition services until he turns 21. I believe I received a glimpse of what the future of his life holds for him should you cut the funding for the brokerages, as well as the plaintiffs in the daily lawsuit that made it very clear that they will be going back to court if steps are made to the brokerages and to the suit.
Thank you. Any questions? Sincerely, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Jen Heffley, enter and sign in, please.
Yes, central.
Let the record show the representative that wanted.
Here. Mr. Chairman, I guess I didn't see the fine print saying this was 5 o'clock central time that we were meeting.
Well, I see.
Per our discussion last night.
Folded, tendled, and mutilated on that one.
I already beat you, please.
Let's put it this way. If Representative Johnson can get here from Astoria, and you had to get here from where?
Oh, actually, Ontario.
Jim.
Hi. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Jennifer Heffey. I live in Aloha, Oregon. I'm a Washington County voter and citizen. I'm here today to address you as a parent of not only children who are in K-12 education, but one of the areas that's looking at being cut under the current proposal and funds are not going to be restored to under the current list of recommendations are early intervention and early childhood special education programs. I have a child that's benefited from these services as well. We are not currently served, but I would like to testify today a little bit about the kinds of changes and the benefit of an education program like that, because it is an education program just as valuable as K-12. You may have noticed, if you've had children, that they'll learn whatever they can because of you or in spite of you. My little ones fed through conversations. They devoured picture books. They effortlessly and faithfully learned all the curse words that I would say traffic. You know, these are smart kids. They will do well in school. But then I had my child that did not absorb information like a thirsty sponge. My child avoided stimuli and experiences that typical toddlers relish in play. My child desperately managed to stay the same, a baby in a toddler's body. Now, there is a medical label that is applied to my daughter's disorder. However, from our family's experience, there's not much medical about it.
If I may, how old is that child?
My daughter now is 6.
Thank you.
She is no longer in early intervention or early childhood education. Very tragic. But there were no procedures, there were no pills, and we would pay $150 an hour for licensed medical therapists who didn't do much to help my daughter. But what they did ask me when I came in to see them was, what is early intervention doing? What are those folks doing? And then they would try to emulate it. I was paying for people to do the kinds of quality things that educators knew how to do for my child. And that's what we found worked, and worked very, very well. My frustrated, silent child learned to do symbols, use pictures to make her desires known, and with a lot of time and patient dedication, her teachers taught her how to comprehend the English language, how to predict and interact with her environment, and the pre-kindergarten special education that my daughter received is the foundation of everything that has come since and everything that will come next, and I know that. Because of early intervention, my daughter learned how to become a student, and because of early childhood special education, my child learned how to learn. I appreciate completely what the legislator is trying to do to restore education in our state. We all value it. We value our students. Some segments of students, though, can fall behind earlier than the typical junior high, high school. Those students that we try to get our test scores up on, some kids need to learn. But these kids are just as bright. They're just as funky as most students. They deserve, and their parents will demand, the type of quality, appropriate education programs and services that will help them learn, grow, flourish, and contribute as citizens in our state. I hope that Oregon's education programs will truly strive to leave no child behind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jen. Any questions for this witness? Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you all.
Next individual is Vivian Colvin. Did I do that right?
You did.
Enter and sign in.
Yeah. Good afternoon, and thank you for letting me testify here. My comments are summarized in a brief letter. I come. My name is Vivian Colvin, and I come as a voter and a parent and a longtime citizen of Oregon. And my purpose in coming today was, as we enter into this desperation special session, I'm just really encouraging all of us as citizens and as representatives to grab the courage that we desperately need in order to pull all of this together. And it's going to transcend all of our party lines. It's going to transcend all of our special interests and truly take the courage. And so my comments are summarized here. I'll pass them out and let others take the floor to feed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here. And as Vivian has just indicated, we are accepting written testimony. So if you have any or any notes that you'd like to copy to put into the permanent record, we'd be happy to accept those. It's my understanding from our track staff that Jane O'Keefe has just returned. We'd be happy to hear from Ms. O'Keefe.
For the record, my name is Jane O'Keefe. I'm a Lake County Commissioner, and I am President of the Association of Oregon Counties. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I came up here from Lakeview today because there was no alternative to telling you in person on behalf of the counties in Oregon that you will do a great disservice to the people of Oregon if you do not elevate your politics to its noblest level and find a compromise which protects both the taxpayer as well as both the most needy among us and the communities we both serve. To do this, we'll take convictions that the cuts outlined in the attached exhibit will in fact cause harm to your citizens or threaten the safety of your community. It isn't easy to face the risk of providing some new revenue to avoid this consequence. Likewise, it isn't easy to make cuts, even if admitting that some cuts can be made and even, I'm sorry, if some cuts can be made and should be part of the solution. You face a dilemma of darned if you do, darned if you don't. And when you find yourself in that situation, I think you're best off looking for the middle, for the balance, not one side or the other. I know that there are suggestions that any new operating revenue ought to await the upcoming 2005 session. I wouldn't want to bet that what we see is any different then than the attitude we see in this session. Being a county official gives me a healthy dose of skepticism about counting on future elected bodies. I believe for all of us, the future of the state starts today. You have to start a collaborative process. If you don't start now, it's a poor signal to the 2003 session. You can leave some good work, a first step, and a demonstration of how to work together. In conclusion, one of the ideas we heard early on was to leave a temporary solution for education. In our opinion, that doesn't go far enough. There are real consequences to the people you serve in your community in addition to education. The best reasons you have to follow a balanced path are right here in the exhibit attached to this testimony. As we looked at the bill that was introduced last night, it's a little bit unclear to us which is how that bill would affect our programs entirely, but we do applaud that as a good first start and would be glad to answer questions.
Yeah, please understand this is a work in progress, and your comments are very articulate. I mean, there are some areas that need to be addressed, and some I think we've done about as much as we can do in this add back proposal. How far is it from Lakeview?
Mr. Chair, it is a 7-hour drive from where I live. It's about 350 miles, a little bit more than that for me.
I don't know, Ben, but it's a long darn way. Did you leave this morning?
Actually, I was here last night.
Thank you for being here. Any questions for Ms. O'Keefe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. O'Keefe, it may be a matter of the acoustics in this room and my inability to hear you, but at the very end of your testimony, you said that you weren't sure how the bill that was introduced last night affected county programs. And then I wasn't sure what you said after that. Could you restate that?
Basically, what I said, or Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, what I said was that it looked like a good first start at attempting to solve the problem.
Then perhaps you can follow up, Mr. Chair. Perhaps then you can reconcile something for me. I have heard from some of your colleagues that the cuts that would accompany this bill that are not addressed with new revenue would have a profound effect on the delivery of mental health services. And at least some of your colleagues have shared with me their concern that that would in turn affect county and local government's ability to either care for those folks that were affected or have money for other alternatives. Reconcile your statement about a good first start with the detail about effects on particularly mental health programs at the local level.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, what I meant was that we need to go further in either looking for further revenue enhancements or need to look in different places for cuts.
Thank you very much.
I think looking at the heading, that there's an area here that you left off, and part of that is VA funding that needs to be addressed as well, which obviously impacts counties.
Thank you.
But we're sensitive to that as well. I mean, like I say, this is a work in progress, and we're moving ahead. This bill has improved dramatically in 48 hours, 24 hours, and will continue, I believe, to be addressed. Any further questions? Thank you for coming all the way from Lakeview. Bart? Miller?
Hi, I'm Bart Miller, and I'm just some guy from Portland who drove down for the day First of all, I think I overheard Representative Westman say as he came in, someone greeted him, and he said, that's the nicest thing anyone said to me today. And actually, Vivian and I both came down today to find as many representatives and senators as we could to thank all of you for taking on what has become an increasingly thankless task as this session has continued. I'm a teacher from Portland. I made that career change 5 years ago. I didn't go into it for the money. And I'm very conservative, and that may seem kind of strange because it sometimes seems like you don't see a lot of conservative teachers. I never thought I'd be down in Salem asking for more revenues. I'm at the bottom of the pay scale. I'm employable in any state. I can go anywhere. And it increasingly scares me that in this state, that if I'm thinking like that, probably a lot of other people are too. So what I'm asking today, or want to talk about in less than 90 seconds, is to talk about the cuts that are happening. I think you all know this, that they are hurting real people out there. I see little kids that are going to bed with earaches because they don't have 15 cents worth of amoxicillin. And I see really bright kids that are shunted aside. And the really bright ones, as you may know from your school experience, are often the troublemakers. And they're the ones that we're really losing a lot of potential. I feel like we're eating our own young in this state. Yeah, I want revenue. I hate the idea of borrowing it, but I support it if that's what it comes down to. I think it's cheaper to assist the state over this bridge rather than try to rebuild the state after it collapses. I really want legislators to know that they can earn votes by leadership rather than just lose them by proposing taxes. And the people around me, at least, I have a decidedly small circle, really would support anything bipartisan coming out of Salem. I'll take questions if there's any. If that was blurry, I tried to make it as succinct as I could. I notice you're all perking up here as this session continues. You know.
Any questions for Bart? I want to clarify. You describe yourself, self-described as a conservative.
Yeah, I'm.
And part of the solution that you see to the dilemma we're in, which is about a $1.75 billion shortfall, is a revenue solution.
I see revenue as being part of that solution, yeah, I do.
Thank you very much.
And, yeah, I would support it as bonds. I would support it as taxes. I would even support it as a sales tax. If the sales tax was written in a way that it wasn't scarily possibly expendable by anybody other than the people of the state. That's been my experience as a voter in the past, that sales tax proposals have always been ones that seemed somewhat open-ended and subject to revision. And so, yeah, I would even support a sales tax, and that says something, that how desperate I am. So, okay.
It's in my language. Yeah, they've always been thinly veiled excuses for massive revenue increases as opposed to true tax reform.
I would support that, and I think a lot of people in the state would. But, again, I'm really hoping for something bipartisan. We've walked all around the building today. We've shaken a lot of hands, talked to a lot of people, and I almost feel that it's almost like a Civil War situation where people are saying, well, we don't want any trouble, but those other guys, and both sides are telling me that their hands are tied. And nobody's hands are tied, you know, we're the state of Oregon. You know, that old Neil Goldschmidt quote, if we can't do it in the state of Oregon, where can we do it? There aren't many states where you can just walk in and buttonhole a senator or a representative or the governor. And I've done that in the state in the past. I'm doing it today. And so, yeah, we have this tremendous opportunity.
We don't have many more witnesses. Can you stick around till after this hearing is over?
Yeah, I'm spending the day here.
Thank you.
I'll be here. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down. Catherine West.
My penmanship is terrible. Catherine White, for the record.
Catherine what?
White.
White?
Uh-huh.
This is White?
Yeah, it is. W-E-I-T.
That's what it says.
I'm here on behalf of the...
Did you introduce... Okay. Oh, you're right. You said it four times. So you're good.
I'll tell it again.
It's just a clever way for me to get the witness to introduce herself. Go ahead.
Catherine White, and I'm with the Oregon Developmental Disabilities Coalition and the Cross Disability Coalition. And I'm here on behalf of those organizations to testify in opposition to to this piece of legislation, obviously it does not restore significant cuts that have been proposed for people with disabilities in the state. As you, most of you know, that many of these cuts being proposed will ultimately cost the state additional revenue in requiring people to go into higher levels of care. I just wanted to delineate just a few of the cuts that we have been hearing from people from around the state. Family support services that are designed to help families who have children with disabilities keep that child in the home and keep them out of more expensive care, foster care. I am a parent of a young man with very significant disabilities who lives in a group home. He requires one-on-one 24-hour care. We have heard from families who are absolutely in panic that something will be happening to their family support services and they will no longer be able to keep their children at home. From people who have children in group homes, though as Mr. Sonniger mentioned earlier, many of these individuals no longer have families that are in the group homes, and so there isn't a backup security system for them to send them home. Most of you are familiar with the Staley settlement, which was a result of identifying that many people are eligible for Medicaid services and were being denied by the state of Oregon. We have just started rolling out those services in a very, very cost-effective, very creative way to provide people services that will scratch where they itch and not cost more than what people really need. Those services are on the cut list. For people with physical disabilities, there are enormous levels of cuts in the client employed provider system, all the way up to the very survival levels of support for people who are being provided supports in their homes. Mental health services, you've heard a little bit about that, children's psychiatric services, Portland Psychiatric Center, many people being unable to access cost-effective mental health services. I think that what we would also want to draw your attention to is that many of these services are run by small nonprofit businesses that employ people throughout the state. We're talking about potentially the elimination of thousands and thousands of jobs. The client employed provider system alone, there are over 12,000 client employed providers. In the DD system, many of our group homes are located in small communities where we're actually one of the major providers or one of the major employers in the community that also bring revenue into the community and purchases of goods and supplies. And we're actually working to gather that data so that people can be aware of what the economic impact is just on a business perspective and some of these cuts. I would also like to support what the previous gentleman just said. I'm hearing from people I've never heard from before, people who've never been politically involved, people who identify themselves as conservative, non-tax people, who are saying it's gone too far. We've lost what we valued in the way of schools. The human services system is in crisis. And they want the opportunity to take a vote. They're saying to me, why don't they just ask us whether we would be willing to vote for additional revenue or additional taxes? And so I guess I just would urge you to remember there are a lot of people who have not been tremendously involved before who are asking these questions and asking for the opportunity to make some choices.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Chairman. Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. White, on previous occasions, this body has sent measures to the public where the only option before them, either by law or by reality, was that they needed to send the option there. Obviously, the rainy day fund is that type of alternative because we have to change the Constitution and the voters have to make the decision ultimately to change the Constitution. We can't change the Constitution. Cigarette tax was a one of reality. A fairly major interest was indicating that if we enacted it, say by referendum, we put it on the ballot and potentially delay any public action on it until November 2004. clearly the measure we have before us here today, or any measure like it, we clearly have the authority as a body simply to enact it. Would your preference be if we were to consider a bonding measure as part of a solution, that we simply enact it and not refer it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, I don't know that I can respond to that question. I think as advocates, we have a tremendous responsibility to educate our constituencies and our communities on the issues. And the complexity of the bonding issue, I'm not sure I can respond to.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
But as the state representative and as an elected, all the members here being elected members representing their constituencies, don't you believe that the public as a whole would favor acting versus referring?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I hear that very strongly.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just so you know, Vivian is in the back backing you up with a great question. You're not alone up here.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you. Francisco Lopez.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee. I'm Francisco Lopez, and I'm the director of the Support Services Brokerage of the Integrated Services Network. I'm a resident of Marion County. I'm a registered voter, and I do vote. So I'm here in opposition to the proposed legislation. Let me tell you some reasons why. One is, let me start a little bit of background. The support services brokerage serves adults with developmental disabilities so they can remain in our community. They can stay in their community that they love, that they live with their families. Also, the support services brokerage provide vital services to our community. Our brokerage, we have 10 brokerages throughout the state, and our brokerage is in eight county area, Marion, Polk, Benton, Yamhill, Clatsop, Columbia County, Tillamook, and Lincoln County. Remember all of them, but the eight counties. So far, only our brokerage have served close to 203 people and throughout these eight counties. But statewide, all the 10 brokerages have served over 1,300 adults with developmental disabilities. Just want to say that, you know, not having additional revenue, providing additional revenue to our Department of Health and Human Services, really eliminate many of these programs. I think that you are talking about restoring $5 million, but still they need to make approximately $160 million in cuts. That will mean that the headline after this is approved will be services for adults with developmental disabilities were eliminated by a state legislature. And I think that as a citizen, as a voter, I will remember this, I will carry this throughout the whole, through this coming month and the next biennium. We don't want that headline to continue for the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon is not honoring the state legal settlement that provides services for adults with developmental disabilities. You know, we might go back to court to deal with this issue. And we might be, again, you know, dealing with adults with developmental disabilities not having the support that they need. So 1,300 might be without any support if we don't make the right decision now. I just was thinking about it, you know, last year we had a $200 check that we were celebrating. Well, we are now really facing the consequences of bad management of government. And we as taxpayers, I think that we are facing, you know, very difficult decisions. But I think that as I will speak for others that spoke before me, we are losing what we value in community, schools, vital services for the needy, for the poor, if we make these cuts. So more cuts will mean we lose what we value in our community. Additional taxes that are probably difficult for anyone will mean to preserve what we value and what is important. So thank you very much.
Francisco, thank you. Any questions for Francisco? I don't want to pry anything out.
I do.
Representative. Oh, Francisco, oh, please come on back.
Thank you, Mr. Lopez. A mechanical question, because you mentioned two of the counties that are in my legislative district. How are services from the brokerage accessed?
Yeah, each individual, each adult with a developmental disability is entitled to what we call basic assistance. They're entitled up to $800 a month on support services. They can get respite care. They can get vocational programs, employment programs, sports activities, medical equipment that they need, the care that they need on a day-to-day basis. Many of them also use services to buy basic things that they need at their home that they can support them staying in their community, transportation services. So many services, so the domino effect of this is this is eliminated, then also will unemploy a lot of providers that provide transportation services, respite care, and many other services vital to our customers, to our consumers.
Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. Sharon Lewis.
Thank you, Chair, Representative, for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Sharon Lewis. I am a parent of three children in the Portland Public Schools, one of which happens to have a developmental disability. I am here in opposition to the current legislation in the hopes that you can find a way to come up with something that includes revenue generation, because the cuts as they stand right now are far too wide and far too deep to other programs. In particular, programs from the Department of Education that are not included in the state school fund, including early intervention, early childhood special education services, and regional programs, will hurt students with disabilities significantly. You're talking about cutting into programs that serve our most vulnerable population, children with disabilities aged birth to five. Early childhood education, early childhood special education services impact families in tremendous ways, as you heard from Ms. Hefty. All of you earlier this year in prior special sessions received a copy of this book, which I will leave for the record again, as a reminder as to how well these programs work and ultimately our cost savings for the K-12 system, because children come into school ready to learn. Without revenue generation, the cuts will hit families with children with disabilities tremendously, not only early childhood special education, but also family support programs that come down through the counties that provide basic respite care and other support services for our children, Oregon health plan cuts that will impact our families, as well as cuts to mental health. My daughter, as a five-year-old, has benefited tremendously from early childhood special education. Our family would not, Zoe would not be entering kindergarten this year in a public school setting in a regular classroom if it had not been for that program. It will cost the district far more for those children to come into self-contained classrooms and into circumstances where they've not been supported as younger children if you continue to make these kinds of cuts into these programs. Please go back to your colleagues and find a way to make these cuts not go as deeply as they can. And I, as a small business owner, also support increased taxes, whether they be tax reform in the sense of sales taxes or an income tax surcharge. I will pay the money. Don't take these services away from our families. We're taking it from all sides. Thank you very much.
What type of small business?
Graphic design.
Good for you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Hannah Starr.
Thank
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My handwriting is bad, too. It's Jana Starr.
That's a lot better than that Lee Hazelwood guy, you know, I'm telling you that.
Oh, yeah, I am Jana Starr, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities. We're a federally funded council under the Developmental Disabilities Assistance and Bill of Rights Act, the federal law, and we're put in place to provide advice and such in the state of Oregon on developmental disabilities. I've been in the advocacy community and in about the advocacy community in Oregon for about 15 years, and I guess what I'm feeling right now is this is really the first time I've seen our state approach the brink of doing something so unconscionable to our most vulnerable citizens in 15 years that I've been advocating. I haven't previously seen us threatening to put in us threatening to close down homes where people with severe developmental disabilities live. I haven't seen us previously threatening to take away the very first chance many people with severe developmental disabilities have ever had to get services, people whose parents are in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. They're living at home in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and they've just got the chance through this Staley settlement and the self-directed support program. I haven't seen this make such incredibly severe threats to the Oregon Health Plan, the entire CHIP program, the beautiful CHIP program that's serving children that didn't previously have health insurance, the medically needy program. We're always having to fight and save that program, but it means so much to so many people, and many people with severe disabilities. These and so many others can only be termed unconscionable. We're on the brink, and I think now what we have to do is just to really have the courage to do what is so difficult, and we have to raise new revenue. I sat in Speaker Simmons' business roundtable the other day in this room and heard a number of small business people, even small businesses primarily, make some incredibly compelling cases, talking about laying off 55 of their 70 employees, talking about laying off the first two employees they've ever had to lay off, talking about their health insurance prices going up 42 to 62% over 2 years. That's the energy increase statistic. Talking about their health insurance prices rising like 11 to 30 or 40% over the same 2 years. Those are very compelling stories. To me, the answer, though, is not to say, therefore, don't raise taxes. Don't make us pay for more services, because we don't connect the dots and remember that what's out there is that safety net for all of us, all Oregonians, when we might happen to need it. Also, one of our other speakers mentioned the small businesses in the communities that run services for people with disabilities and that run all kinds of human services. These are small businesses too. We hear every year about their energy price increases and their health insurance increases. And I guess my bottom line is I really urge you not to let the future of our state rise and fall on House Bill 4070. I think it's well intended, but I think it's a mediocre attempt to avoid the real issue. Our state cannot sustain in the economic environment that we find ourselves in today with our current revenue structure. And so I just urge you to at least to strike a balance and not to be afraid to raise the revenue, genuine new revenue for our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Candace. That's my brother-in-law's wife's name, my brother's wife's name. So, thank you. Any questions for Janice? Thank you very much. Mr. Rose.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I'm here in opposition to this bill. We're not against bonding. And I think we demonstrated that. We worked pretty damn hard, on behalf of an effort to override vetoes, alienating some of our longtime allies and friends. But this is only half of an idea. Bonding won't fix the problem. We need some kind of a package of bonding cuts and revenue that will, in fact, register this year and make a legitimate platform for the task you guys have. Just in, you're getting down to 80 or 90 days before you'll be back to deal with it. We don't think you should refer this. Whatever bonding you do, you should do it. You're constitutionally required to balance the budget. We don't think you should refer whatever revenue measure you do now. I think the only reason to refer a measure is fear of people getting signatures. And you can get at that by saying that if the signature's there, then we'll vote on it in January. The signature deadline will be sometime in early December, assuming you get out of here before the weekend. So we'll know sometime in November whether the signatures are going to be there. And certainly, if only a month later, then election would be. If we put it on the bill, the uncertainty for our folks is there until we finally get a vote. I encourage you to act as legislators and do what needs to be done. I encourage you to focus on some kind of borrowing, some kind of cuts, and some kind of revenue measures. And think about 2002-2003 as well as 2003-2005. School starts tomorrow, except in Hood River, Sisters, Fall City, and for the other districts who are delaying until they see what happens on September 17th. And school, if we go down the wrong road and lose the resources, school's going to start ending in other districts sometime in mid-April. And I think if we have a rolling shutdown of school starting in mid-April, you're going to do more damage to Oregon's future and economy than anywhere near some kind of a small surcharge. Specifically to some numbers I'd like to share with you. We left here just a short 13 months ago with a $5.2 billion budget for schools that we're all pretty proud of. And since that time, we lost $82 million in the school improvement fund. We lost $20 million because property taxes came in lower than estimated last fall. That probably, we're going to lose more this fall. We're probably still overestimated. We lost $46 million to the, there were more students than were estimated when we put out the $5.2 billion budget. We lost $50 million in a bonding bill that's already been defeated. And if I understand this bill right now, of the $302 million that would be our share of the across the board cut, we'd recover 160 of it. So we still lose 142 million. That brings the total loss there. And that
where do you come up with the 300 million?
Well, the our share of across the board, the 478.
Oh, across,
okay. This thing. And I apologize. My numbers are a little loose. I'm running a fair at the booth to raise money for a couple of charities. And so I don't have all my backup staff that I'm going to have at this point in time. But I think I'm pretty close. So this bill seems to give up $160 million into the state school fund, if I read it right.
Correct. Okay. So you're talking about the pro rata proportional
share, right.
Yeah.
Right.
In addition to the 82-20-46-50.
Right.
All right.
And then we have this little thing out here in a couple of weeks. The ballots went out started yesterday. There's $150 million more at stake that it's problematic that we get that passed. But if I'm correct, the $340 million, that's $500 a kid. That's about 10%. Cut for the where we were, and it's all coming in the second half of a budget period. If we lose the other $230 a kid, the $150 million goes down. We're well below where we were 2 years ago. And is that the base we start from? I assume this one-time bonding is one-time money, and the base we start building on for 2003-2005 is really the money we had 2 years ago. That is not building and investing in education. And I know that we have problems. And I encourage you to get together. I've been carrying a box around for 2 months. I have three little boxes in it. One's bonding, one's cut, and one's revenue. And I don't think, you know, we came close. If the problem got so much bigger, I think we could have done okay with the shift. And that's what we fought for. But I don't think you can do it now. The problem's too big. And I encourage you to act as legislators, the body that's responsible for balancing this budget. And there's a rumor around that it's this way or the highway, and I hope that isn't true. That Oregon and our kids deserve a better deal than that. And with that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rose.
Mr. Rose, I was going to ask you what the total cut to education was, and you've gone through the numbers. I just want to make sure that I got it. We left here with $5.2 billion.
It was minus 82 then for the school improvement, minus 20 for the lower property taxes, minus 46 for the more students, minus 50 for the bonding. That's a total of almost 200 million.
198.
198. Then you've got 302 is what you're calculating for your across the board.
123.
That's our share of the 47.
Right.
What?
That takes you up to 500.
Yeah.
Plus the possibility of the ballot measure not making it in September. So your possible maximum exposure is 650.
Correct, except this bill, if you're going down this route, restores apparently 160 of them.
Right, but at the end of the day, we're down $500 million.
Yeah.
Rounded. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure I got the math.
And I might be counting the defeat of the bonding bill twice, because I just counted it there, and I got to go back and figure out if you defeat it there, or you count it again in this new set of numbers. But even if you throw 50 in and 50 out, ballpark is still in the same.
Thank you.
Well, just to even muddier that muddy pond, the precise number for the pro rata cuts of the governor's recommended cuts out of the 482 is $202 million for K-12. And so all the other numbers should be adjusted
appropriately.
So we just saved $100 million.
Right. Okay. I mean, you're still way off.
That's pretty good.
You're way short.
I understand the point, but I'm just saying, and I'm not quibbling, but it's 201 change, so let's call it 202.
Okay.
And trust me, I understand. Your point is still a valid out here with 405.
And we only got 8 months.
No, and you put a multiplier in there. Understand. Not arguing. Just so people in the audience know, it's about 405. Any questions for Audrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Rose, I'm just going to get it on the record again pretty clearly. Obviously, you were in support of the bonding measure, and you were in support of the override of the bonding measure, and you still believe that, given the gravity of our situation, a solution might ultimately include a bonding measure as part of that. Is that correct?
I believe it almost has to.
And given that, too, I think there's a great deal of rhetoric about this. You would see that given the gravity of our situation, it might include multiple different things to bring us to some resolution of this, whether it's cuts, whether it's a bonding measure, whether it's revenue, whether it's use of some other revenue that we can avail ourselves of that may be still available. You could see all of those alternatives coming forward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Allen, I group it into three groups. Borrowing or bonding, cuts, and revenue. And some of those revenues have to be taxes. Now, whether there's other pots, I think it's just filling most of the pots. That's what you're trying to get me to.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim.
The other thing is, I mean, we didn't account for, in your numbers, what happens if 19 fails, and that's 150. So,
yeah, that's about $230 a year. And that's, with all the respect, I think that's a problematic problem.
Well, I know we've done a lot better so far in getting some organized support behind that, but let me encourage, well, maybe I can't do that from the diet.
You probably shouldn't do that from that diet.
Yeah.
There is a campaign, there is radio, there is some direct mail.
Some wide lines that people will read between.
Right.
Representative Johnson.
I think Mr. Rosen's answered my question. Thanks.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for all you do, Ozzy.
Mr. Hazelwood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and to Representative Morgan, sorry that the people on the balcony didn't have a chance to sing happy birthday to you, but I'm delivering that message because we were complaining up there that we weren't asked to. My name is Lee Hazelwood. I'm a longtime senior advocate, former member of the Governor's Commission under the last three governors, a member of the Mid-Willamette Valley Senior Service Agency Advisory Council, and also a board member of the United Kingdom of Oregon. All of that will get you a small pop at McDonald's. But thank you for coming in on Labor Day. I want to talk to you about an answer seeing the governor's proposed cuts. I want to talk to you about one part of that, of those cuts. I want to talk to you about OPI, Oregon Project Independence, which was started in 1973. With a lot of hard work, during the last regular session, we were able to get OPI funded to the 1999 level. I want to emphasize that again. OPI was only funded to the 1999 level. I haven't heard anybody talking today about just getting the 1999 level. The Speaker's task force that sent out and held hearings around the state found out OPI is a crucial program for the state of Oregon. The governor has proposed cutting $2,684,505 in his latest budget hearing. You are proposing adding $707,520, which leaves a shortfall of $1,976,985. OPI is a state-funded program providing long-term care services to low-income people age 60 and older, not receiving Medicaid services. In-home service will be eliminated to approximately 3,000 clients. And I know most of you have OPI clients in your districts. The program's original intent was to keep seniors in their own homes instead of institutional setting. 5% of the clients return as Medicaid cases. 1/3 of OPI clients have survival priority levels between 1 and 3. In-home services will be eliminated to approximately 3,000 clients currently receiving OPI. These individuals have to rely upon their own resources, and some may not be able to remain at home, resulting in spin down to Medicaid eligibility. Many OPI providers are low-income home care workers. Programs are administered by local AAAs. A number of the small rural AAAs will be put at risk of having to close all of their senior programs. I'm open to, and thank you, and I'm open to any questions you might have.
Thanks for being here, Lee. Any questions? Representative Johnson?
Thank you. I know what a keen observer you are of the process down here, and I know you do it as a volunteer, so thank you very much.
And, Ms. Johnson, may I interrupt? If you can ask a hard question,
yes.
You better get Phyllis up.
I would be pleased to let them collaborate on the answer.
I've only been doing this to Representative Johnson for 20 years, and I'm still learning.
Well, now you've got, you're able to assist.
Now you have some support. Phyllis Rand, Governor's Commission on Senior Services.
Thank you. Here's my question. I'm trying to figure out how the priorities were established for the appropriations in House Bill 4070. It seems to me that we're only adding back $5 million to the Department of Human Services, and much of that seems focused on assisted living and nursing facility. To what degree were you or any of the other senior activists consulted about the buybacks in this bill, given that there seem to be extreme other needs, as just pointed out by Mr. Hazelwood's testimony?
No one asked our advice. No one asked us, pardon me, if we had any recommendations. So, we're kind of like out in left field.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for being here. Seeing no other witnesses, unless you have anyone in the audience that wants to testify, I can take one more. We're already 10 minutes late for the floor. Anyone else wish to testify? We will close the public hearing on House Bill 4070 and 4071, and we will recess the House Special Committee on Budget Restoration.